Good morning. This is a workshop on the draft general waste discharge requirement order number R1-2019-0001 for dairy in the North Coast region. Ms. Sherry Blatt, I remind anybody that wants to speak on this item, please fill out a speaker card and give it to Ms. Patty.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Is this good? Can you hear me? Okay.
Very well.
Close. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Sherry Blatt, Water Resource Control Engineer of your staff. This is item 8, draft general waste discharge requirements for dairies. This draft GWDR for all dairies is proposed to replace the orders as presented that have been adopted since 2012. Many components of this draft GWDR are the same as the 2012 conditional waiver that currently covers most dairies in the region. We've learned much about dairies and water quality in the past 6 years. Inspections have been done on all the existing dairies. Surface water and groundwater sampling have been analyzed and dairy water quality reports have been reviewed. The draft GWDR proposes to strengthen water quality protection in several areas. Additions to the permit program include new construction dairies, expanding dairies, the reopening of inactive dairies, and goat, sheep, and water buffalo dairies. Additions also include a riparian management plan and a section on tribal cultural resources. Changes to the permit program include a required nutrient management plan for application of nutrients to pastures and crops. There are changes in some surface water and groundwater sampling parameters, the timing of sampling, and the method of submittal of results. There are also changed waste discharge requirement specifications and prohibitions to the discharge of waste. Today, I'll present the orders in the existing dairy program that are to be rescinded by the new draft GWDR. I'll compare the existing dairy program to the new draft GWDR, which contains new requirements and changes to requirements since the 2012 dairy program. An initial study and mitigated negative declaration were drafted for this permit and distributed for public review. We are in the middle of the review period now, so this is a good time for an introduction to the draft GWDR. Stakeholder outreach is important to us for having a conversation with dairy representatives, environmental organizations, and the public regarding regulation of dairies in the North Coast region. We'll discuss the various partnerships which have helped to make a better dairy program. And last is a review of the milestones that we intend to meet to bring the draft GWDR to the regional board members in the future. 5 orders have been proposed to be replaced by the draft GWDR. The first, the NPDES, National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, and the last 3 being the waivers all expire every 5 years. The only permit that does not expire is the General Waste Discharge Requirements Order from 2012. So reviewing one by one, this first, the board adopted the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES permit in 2012. Along with the dairy program, it was for concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, that discharged from the dairy production area to surface waters. Enrollment was not required, and no dairies met the requirements of needing to be enrolled. Next is the general waste discharge requirements that we have for dairies. This was adopted as part of the dairy program in 2012 and was reserved for the dairies that had a high risk to water quality. Nutrient management plans for nutrient application to land was required. 3 dairies are enrolled in this GWDR. Most of the existing cow dairies were enrolled in the conditional waiver in 2012. There are currently 120 dairies enrolled under this conditional waiver. In 2015, an individual waiver was issued to a dairy opening at a previously abandoned dairy site. That individual waiver will expire in the year 2021. So we propose to enroll this dairy under the draft GWDR presented today. The 2012 conditional waiver expired and was renewed by the extension conditional waiver in late 2016. This gave us time to write the GWDR presented today. This checklist shows which requirements in our existing dairy program remain the same, are changed, or are new in the new draft GWDR. I'll talk about each subject shown here individually in a little while. As you can see by this very general table, the draft GWDR is largely the same as the 2012 waiver that we've been implementing for the past 6 years. However, we've learned some things by regulating and inspecting the dairies, collecting water samples, and reviewing reports. Thus, we've made some important revisions. This draft GWDR covers changes needed to improve water quality protection. Green check marks show existing requirements. First, a water quality plan and annual report are required by the existing dairy program and the draft GWDR. The water quality plan and annual reports are forms in the permits that discuss water quality, regulations, best management practices, and require the dairy to describe protection measures implemented to protect surface water and groundwater. Next, waste discharge specifications are required conditions in both the existing dairy program and the dairy draft GWDR. Both the existing 2012 dairy program and the draft GWDR require compliance with state water quality regulations, such as California Code of Regulations, Title 27. This includes protection from discharges to surface water and groundwater from the production area. Changes under waste discharge specifications in the draft GWDR include nutrient to land application areas, such as pastures and cropland, protection of riparian areas, tribal cultural resources, information on compliance with the state compost regulations, and implementation of best management practices to reduce odors as a requirement of the initial study mitigated negative declaration. In 2012, nutrient management plans were recommended but not required by the conditional waiver. The change here is that the draft GWDR requires nutrient management plans for dairies that have nutrient application to land. Surface water and groundwater monitoring will continue to be required. However, the parameters and timing have changed somewhat, and I'll review those parameters. Two new sections in the draft GWDR are riparian management plans and tribal cultural resources protection. Each permit requirement listed here has a deadline for submittal and compliance. Dairies can request extensions or modifications to deadlines by writing to the executive officer. New dairy construction must go through their own CEQA, such as through county permitting. Let's start with which dairies are covered. In 2012, only existing dairies were covered. New and expanding dairies could not enroll and so are required to prepare a CEQA document to start the process to get an individual permit. Individual permits for new or expanding dairies have to be considered for adoption by the Regional Water Board. Two dairies went through this process in 2015 and 2016 in our region. The draft GWDR is proposed to cover existing dairies plus new dairies, dairies expanding their herd size beyond their maximum animal counts given to us in 2012, inactive dairies that are reopening, and goat, sheep, and water buffalo dairies. All of these new enrollments must meet the initial study mitigated negative declaration in the draft GWDR attachment F. There are minimum sizes of dairies. Any dairies below the minimum of 25 cow or water buffalo or 100 goat or sheep are covered by the draft GWDR. They are not allowed to discharge, but they do not need to enroll or submit a notice of intent. If these smaller dairies are found to be a threat to water quality, they may be required to be enrolled and submit reports and plans as required by the other larger dairies. So these small dairies must comply with the standard conditions of the draft GWDR. There is no monitoring or reporting for these smaller dairies. The California Code of Regulations, Title 27, waste discharge specifications are the same for the 2012 waiver and the draft GWDR to protect surface water and groundwater. Dairies statewide are required to retain waste, meet manure pond sizing and maintenance, exclude animals from surface waters in the production area, and ensure that nutrients are applied to land at agronomic rates. The draft GWDR conditions section includes waste discharge specifications regarding the production and confined areas, retention ponds, and land application areas. For instance, more best management practices have been added. New conditions in the draft GWDR include sections on protection of riparian areas, tribal cultural resource protection, composting, and odors. Composting is encouraged under the draft GWDR as long as the water quality is protected. The compost section includes information on the new statewide compost order for businesses that sell larger quantities of compost. Best management practices for odors are also included. Also, management of odors is discussed in the attachments because odors must be addressed as part of the initial study mitigated negative declaration. You can change slides. In 2012, nutrient management plans were only required for dairies at 700 or more milking plus dry dairy cows. This is a US EPA requirement for large confined animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. There are about six dairies in our region that are considered large CAFOs with over 700 mature dairy cows. In 2012, about 25% of North Coast dairies had nutrient management plans. The draft GWDR for 2019 requires nutrient management plans for dairies that apply manure to pastures or croplands, or dairies that graze animals over 30 days per year. Since now over 80% of dairies have nutrient management plans, this new requirement will be applicable to about the last 20 cow dairies. The nutrient management plan to be completed is by November 30th, 2020, and must be developed by a soil crop specialist. It includes management of manure and process water with a budget so that nutrients are applied at agronomic rates. The surface water monitoring in the monitoring reporting program is basically the same as 2012, includes monitoring above and below all dairies, three times per rainy season, during or directly following a one-inch storm falling within 24 hours. Group monitoring is allowed if approved by the executive officer. There are, however, changes in the parameters sampled. In 2012, samples had to be collected for ammonia, pH, temperature, and electrical conductivity. Over the past few years, we have found that the pH and temperature range results at North Coast areas are consistent, and that unionized ammonia toxicity to aquatic organisms does not occur below an ammonia level of 3 milligrams per liter due to cool temperatures and a fairly neutral pH roughly between 6 and 8. Therefore, the extra pH and temperature monitoring is not needed and just ammonia sampling is required. Also, electrical conductivity is required to track changes to the watershed. Samples that show results out of the ordinary EC for any particular watershed should be checked for discharges from dairies. The groundwater monitoring is somewhat the same as 2012. Representative wells are required to be sampled. Parameters in 2012 and in 2019 include nitrate sampling. The timing, however, is different. For 2012, samples were required to be collected in spring and fall for 2 years for a total of 4 samples. We found no difference in the results of spring and fall samples. Also, fecal coliform was required in 2012 for all wells. The draft GWDR for next year proposes nitrate and total dissolved solid sampling. The TDS is to track the changes in the concentration of salt and minerals in the groundwater over time. Under this new scenario, total coliform would only be tested at domestic wells. If the domestic wells have total coliform present, the homeowners should be made aware of this data, especially if young children or people with compromised immune systems are drinking the water untreated. If irrigation wells and barn wells do not have to be tested for total coliform, just nitrate. Samples are to be tested, preferably in the fall, if possible during years 1, 2, 3, and then every 2 years thereafter. However, if results are greater than or equal to half of the nitrate maximum contaminant level, or MCL, as set by US EPA, then increased monitoring and adaptive management is required. The last new requirement is that groundwater data is to be submitted electronically. Some labs that we spoke with would do this electronic submittal of groundwater results directly for a small fee. To comply with, am I missing something again? The riparian management planning is a new requirement under the draft GWDR. The focus on riparian management is to prevent discharges to surface waters. The riparian management plan is a form located at the end of the water quality plan. It is due to the Regional Water Board in November 2020. It was modeled after the Scott and Shasta River waivers, including performance measures for riparian functions. This is how this is achieved is up to the dairy operator. We do not say you have to install permanent fencing. Rotational grazing with a temporary hot wire fence may be used, for instance. Controlled watercourse crossings may keep manure out of creeks. Flash grazing of riparian areas may be necessary to control weeds at certain times of the year. Dairies can apply for funding of wells or other water conveyances and construction of water troughs away from the creeks. Erosion control and restoration may be necessary over a period of years or in phases. Monitoring and photos are to be provided in the annual reports. It is important to note that discharges of waste to surface waters is prohibited even before the riparian management plan is implemented. Dairies must protect riparian areas from the time of enrollment until the riparian management plan is submitted and implemented. For instance, a gate could be installed at the watercourse crossing to control cow access to the stream to prevent prolonged loafing in the stream. The Tribal Cultural Resources Mitigation Program is a new requirement under the draft GWDR. Assembly Bill 52 was passed into law in 2015. It requires that lead agencies under CEQA consult with tribes on projects. We wrote to the six tribes in our region that are on the tribal consultation list per AB 52 at State Water Resources Control Board. One tribe responded, requesting to consult. We had a conference call with them 1 year ago to hear their concerns. In spring 2018, we drafted the Tribal Cultural Resources Protection, similar to the statewide cannabis order. And then we worked with a State Water Resources Control Board archaeologist to complete the wording in the initial study, mitigated negative declaration, and the draft GWDR attachment E. For existing dairies, if an artifact is discovered, then an archaeologist must be consulted. If the discovery is found to be a significant find and not just an isolated artifact, then the dairy must consult with the local tribe. For new dairies, an archaeology survey is required prior to groundbreaking, such as through the county permits. To comply with CEQA, we held public scoping meetings in August 2017 in Sonoma and Humboldt counties. We drafted an initial study and developed mitigation measures designed to reduce impacts from activities under this draft GWDR to less than significant. Mitigated negative declaration accompanies the initial study. 2 weeks ago, the draft GWDR with attachments and appendices was distributed for a 32-day review and public comment period. We have participated in many outreach meetings with the representatives, with dairy representatives, technical advisors, environmental and special interest groups. Here's a list of the groups that we've met with. Since the draft GWDR was distributed 2 weeks ago, we also met with representatives from a Laguna de Santa Rosa Dairy, the Sonoma County Farm Bureau, University of California Cooperative Extension, UC Davis, California Dairy Quality Assurance Program, Western United Dairymen, and Russian River Keeper. We are also scheduled. We're also scheduling one other meeting, possibly in Humboldt County, soon. I would like to thank all the groups that we meet with regularly that help dairies to meet water quality requirements. Many of these groups help educate and fund water quality improvement projects that have benefited streams in the North Coast region. Western United Dairymen represent over 100 of our dairies. The NRCS funds many, many projects. California Dairy Quality Assurance Program holds our annual report writing workshops every fall and certifies dairies under their quality assurance program. The University of California Cooperative Extension's representatives attend many dairy meetings to help dairies apply for project funding and represent Humboldt County under the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. The Farm Bureau represents dairies and helps operate the surface water monitoring programs. Resource conservation districts have staff that help obtain grants for nutrient management plans and manure management projects. The RCDs also operate surface water monitoring programs, such as in Humboldt County. The California Department of Food and Agriculture regulates dairies and distributes funding for digesters and alternative manure management projects. County and state health departments inspect dairies regularly for quality control of milk products. Commercial milk buyers attend many dairy meetings that we also attend and help dairies to meet water quality regulations. We have met with Reverend Russian Riverkeeper twice over the past 2 years. They have been an important partner in analyzing environmental regulations, reviewing our draft permits, and sampling streams in the area, informing us of water quality issues. On December 3rd, the comment period for the review of the draft GWDR ends. We will collect public and agency comments and respond to comments. The order will be revised if needed. Next, we expect to bring the final draft GWDR to you, possibly as early as February 20th or 21st, 2019. Here's our contact information. Comments can be emailed to our office at northcoast@waterboards.ca.gov or mailed or delivered to our office. Here's my email contact and telephone number and the contact information for my senior, Jim Burke. That's all. Thank you. I'll take any questions or comments.
Well, first, thank you, Sherry. You are instrumental in the regulation and process of the 2012 permit that we did. This definitely has some changes to it. And first and foremost, thank you. And thank you, staff, both of you. Questions and comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sherry is always, very thoughtful and thorough. Thank you for all your work on this. A couple of things. Looking at the riparian management worksheet, section A, use the word native vegetation, and that's the only place I see it in the worksheet. I think for our purposes, even though I personally would advocate the use of native vegetation for riparian function, there may be situations where non-native plants serve the same function. And I just think the use of the word native there can compound that question. Certainly there are a lot of grasses, perennial grasses and the like, that are not native but have strong abilities to retain banks and the like. So since that's the only place it shows up, I'm not sure it needs to be there. And then the other thing, just again to try and avoid confusion in the field, your definition of riparian area, not that I don't agree with it, but it's somewhat vague. And I'm wondering, in places like Humboldt County and Del Norte County, where some first-order streams could be no more than a depression going across a pasture, where you might have sedges growing, you might have wetland plants associated with it, how can we help people understand better what everybody knows what a creek looks like, but not everybody might recognize a first-order stream as a riparian area. So I think there might be some tightening up there of that definition. What are you looking for? And more so, what kind of guidance can the document give, not only to the inspectors, but also the landowner who, wants to fill out the form and do the right thing? So a couple of observations to consider as you move forward. That's all. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Corbett, did you have a question?
As you know, the riparian area gets very tricky because of the variety of conditions in the state. People try various definitions, and including what is riparian vegetation, and they find it's very different in Los Angeles than here. The best example I dealt with in a regulatory situation was aldermen. Crescent or Del Norte County, you bulldoze something, you come back 5 years later, the whole flat area is grown in alder. So I appreciate the sensitivity, and I do think it'd be good to tighten that up, but it is very, very hard given the wide variety of conditions that you're regulating, and especially in the southern part here, it gets just southern enough to start to make that challenging. So encourage your efforts and have some sympathy with the difficulties of the drafting task. The only other thing, totally, you guys are doing great, but for the future, one of the number one errors I see in state attorneys, and I see it in water district council, is thinking that because you've complied with CEQA and CEQA requirements for cultural resources, that that's it and there's nothing more. There is national legislation. There are all kinds of other factors. So you've complied beautifully with CEQA. That was your job. You shouldn't be hunting for more than that now. But I do want to have people have a heads up that that is not the sole answer. You can't defend against, like, National Preservation Act. Oh, I did CEQA. No, that's fine. You complied with state law. So I just want to get that, because I see a lot of errors in a lot of attorneys on that issue. And it's just keeping your eyes open. Stuff is out there bigger than our regulations. And then I have one last question, and that is, I've been going to Farm Bureau. I missed this last meeting. I was ill after 20 years. And I'm always promising them it's one more set of regulations and then it's done. And I have been a liar for 20 years. So what do we have left to do in ag that's going to be additional regulation that you see on the horizon? Just because what I've seen, looking at it a little bit from their eyes, is every year there's something new. And hopefully we're turning the cycle on that. And so I just wanted to, what should I tell the Farm Bureau the next dinner? Is it really done, or what are the areas we're working on so that we can give good information to people? And I don't look forward to explaining additions, but if it's there, I'd rather be candid with people, tell them, and work on getting a strategy of properly dealing with it.
So I'll take that question. As far as dairies are, because this is a general waste discharge requirement permit that doesn't have an automatic sunset, we're hoping that this permit will have a long life, and we may not need to revisit the dairy program for well over 5 years, maybe not, 10 years. Other ag sectors, as was mentioned, responding to Board Member Gant's question this morning, we have one staff person working on the development of the vineyard and orchard permit. At this time, we haven't determined whether that'll be a general WDR or a waiver. We'll have an information item on the status of that permit, the vineyard and orchard permit, at the February 2019 board meeting. In addition, we're working on addressing developing a water quality management plan for lily bulb operations in the Smith River Plain. Let's see, what else? We have the Scott and Shasta waivers, which address grazing operations. We don't currently have a specific schedule to address row crop agriculture up in the Upper Klamath Basin, but we do recognize that is an ag sector that will need to be addressed in one form or another. You've had some updates from Clayton Krager in the past about our, various efforts in the Klamath Basin. And one of those updates mentioned that we are forming some partnerships, some stewardship groups in the Upper Klamath. And part of that effort is to address ag in the Tule Lake Basin in particular.
And are you satisfied that's properly reflected in our triennial review?
Well, it's certainly properly reflected in our annual work plan.
Okay.
That we presented to the board at the September meeting. Trying to review, since most of those are permitting actions as opposed to basin plan amendments, we're not reflecting them in the triennial review necessarily.
So the work plan would be the best outline.
Yes.
That you could direct people to.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sherry, a couple points of clarification and question. First, I noticed that these appendices are basically, look to me, like self-directed. You've included and front-loaded this with quite a lot of appendices here, nutrient management planning and other things. I really appreciate that, by the way. The last permit that we had through in 2012 included then actually the Ag Extension and West United Dairymen, I believe, as you indicated, workshop dairymen and landowners through this. Was that the intent here? You're trying to standardize some of this approach and work product here?
I hope so. If it goes how we've done the last 6 years, the California Dairy Quality Assurance Program has held our annual report writing workshops every fall. And we did that in 2012, the first year for filling out the water quality plan so everybody could understand the questions and fill it out together. And then the next year would be for annual report writing.
Yeah, I think that's really smart and wise. I think it was strategically smart. And I think it's very helpful, by the way, to the regulated community here and actually to stakeholders as well to see what actually these work products look like. I really think that's a really great thing. As far as also the CEQA document here, so you mentioned that we had enrolled, or not we, that there was an enrollment of two dairies after 2012. I believe one of those was the Mellow Dairy on the old Peter site along a road, and they had to go through a CEQA document themselves. They prepared that document. The intent here with this CEQA document is that enrollment then becomes, this CEQA document will suffice for new enrollments. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, good. And finally then, just a question from the standpoint of monitoring. Group monitoring I see is allowed. At the same time, you indicate electronic data submit, or is that envisioned as using something like GeoTracker or some of those mediums that are already out there?
Yes, GeoTracker for groundwater information.
As part of the gamma piece for
yes.
GeoTracker?
Yes.
Is other regions doing that? Is Region 5 or, say, Region 3 doing that now with their dairy permit? Do you know?
I think they would like to. They're looking into that in the future for future permits.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you. I would note that this is a workshop. So as you indicated, Sherry, that this is a public comment period. That door is still open till I think you said December 3rd.
Right.
So, you know, we're here to listen, and final form will come at a meeting down the road. I really appreciate your work and staff's work. And by the way, the work of others here. Any other further questions for Sherry? Yes.
One comment. I talked with you about, a specific item in the text, but just kind of reflecting on this more, I think the addition of new and reopening dairies is really the right move to avoid having to go through individual permit processes. But that addition combined with adding non-cow dairies, I think, you know, has the possibility to create some confusion in the text. And so, I mean, you know, we talked about one item of kind of lack of clarity or inconsistency in what are the requirements for these different categories of dairies. Existing dairies that are already enrolled versus existing dairies that weren't enrolled because they're not cow dairies versus dairies that are new or reopening. And so I just want to really encourage you as you're going through public comment and kind of cleaning up the last of this after public comment to bring it back for adoption, to really just pay a lot of attention to clarity of what's required of each of those categories, because I think that can be one of the really challenging areas of compliance, especially for those operations that are existing but having to enroll for the first time. So making it as clear and easy for them as possible to really understand what is due and when. Be really helpful.
Right. Excellent comment that you had yesterday and again today. We would like to come up with some kind of a little table so that people can. We actually had a table for today, but it was too complicated, so we decided not to show it. But we need one, you know, just for, say, goat dairies so that they know what to expect and when to expect it. So we'll work with those. We have about 10 goat, sheep, water buffalo dairy. So I've been to most of them, all but one of them, actually. The bigger ones that are going to be regulated, even some of the smaller ones I've been to. So we'll work closely with those guys and make them a nice little table so that they know what page to go to, what date they're supposed to submit something.
Any other comments or questions for Sherry? Okay, let's take some couple of comments. I have a number of speaker cards.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. Mr. Paul Souza from West United Dairymen will be first, followed by Deanne Meyer.
Good morning, Board. It's great to be here. I work with several regional water quality control boards from throughout the state, and I must say I really value the relationship with this board, the working relationship, the focus on water quality. It's something we have that's, I think, really good, and I'd like to maintain that, and I think we are, and that's a great thing. The current WDR, in my opinion, or the waiver, it works well. It identifies issues where there are issues. I've talked to staff about surface water monitoring or groundwater monitoring brings up issues that then the board can identify and address those issues individually on those permitted sites. I do support including the new and expanding facilities. Just, you know, permitting streamlining makes it easier for everybody. They do have to go through CEQA individually, but once they do that, it's not additional work on the regional board to have an individual permit for them. One of the things that, since we've already got a program for those that have been regulated for a few years, they've already created a lot of the work that needs to be done. And I think it's important to recognize that and to use that, that we're not asking people to recreate work because, you know, 10% has been added to it, and so you need to recreate the whole document. I would hope that we can figure out what's new, what's added, and focus on those things that folks, what's already been done, you know, counts and it serves its purpose. And the additional work is just the additional work. You're not having to hire somebody and recreate something from the ground up. The time period from the release of the draft order until comment closing period is pretty short, especially for getting out to dairymen. You know, there's folks that are engaged, but it's a relatively small group. I do applaud staff for going out, and hopefully there will be a meeting in Ferndale. But it's still a short time to get people educated on what the changes are and to get people's feedback that are busy working on farm. And so that's something. If there could be more time or additional outreach, there has been a lot of outreach to this point, but since the release of the draft that folks can actually start looking at something and commenting on that, it's a very condensed and compressed time frame. And the more time there is, the better that folks can get educated and become aware of what the issues are and what's expected of them, that they can comment back on that. As I'm sure you guys have heard, and I know the staff has heard being out to visit dairies, it's a very difficult time in the dairy industry right now with milk pricing, organic markets issues, people losing their contracts. It's very challenging. It's important that we control costs as we develop this permit. We absolutely need to protect water quality. Nobody's challenging that. But we need to do that in a way that looks at costs. What are the costs and what do we get for that? We need to focus on water quality. We can't be having reports for the sake of reports. We need to be getting things that achieves our goals in water quality and controlling costs and minimizing costs for an industry that's really struggling financially right now. We're working on written comments, Western United Dairymen, and we will be getting those to you by the close of comments. I'll be working with Melissa on those. She's not able to be here today. And I thank you and for this workshop and for staff getting out in the field and the calls and the things we've had with them, the work that we've already done on some of the components of this order. And I look forward to continuing to work with you as we move forward to getting this adopted. Thank you.
Paul, thank you for your comments. All very good. Mr. John Corbett.
Oh, I just wanted to reaffirm your observation that we do need to focus on the new and what is. The whole concept of this was a progression, not a start over. And so I think that comment is right on the mark. And my understanding is that's sort of the spirit of the regulations. If they miss that mark, we want to hear from you.
Yeah, we will in our detailed comments. Thank you.
I just wanted to sort of affirm your statement about what a tough time it is in the dairy industry. I think that's felt really poignantly by those of us that live in communities with an active dairy industry. And so in terms of cost controls, really encourage you in your written comments to make any, you know, as specific as possible suggestions you can about measures that would help control costs for dairies but still be protective of water quality. And we'll be really interested to see those suggestions.
Okay. Thank you.
Other comments, questions? Paul, can you answer me a question? So Western United Dairymen has been a very big player on the North Coast and throughout the state of California, and an important player too, by the way. Thank you for that. As it is now, it's my understanding that a lot of our dairies, a high percentage of them, are organic at this point in time.
Correct.
A vast majority of them.
Vast majority. Very few that are not, yeah.
Organic standards are another point where organic standards are prescriptive. I was talking to Dominic Carnelli. I know Dominic, and just talking about Dominic was just relating to me briefly that he had converted to organic. I know a lot of our other producers here are organic, and those organic standards are fairly prescriptive, right? That they are, that they mandate feed requirements, loafing requirements, and manage
pasture,
all those things. I would then look towards efficiencies to where the overlap, as you allude, I think your comments were very good, as far as then looking how organic standard requirements then are helping to meet water quality, right? That we don't have an overlap, that we're using efficiencies as an agency on our end. As far as comments then, I know you said that time was short here, or that more time may be needed would be the way that you put it. I would also illuminate if you could, or ask that there be an illumination. I'm not totally familiar with organic standards and how they affect producers here, nor the work products that are required or the on-farm practices, but how do those then reflect into water quality practices here, or how do they reflect into compliance with a permit? Mount St. John mentioned that, you know, we have a waiver now, and the waivers are, by their very design and under legislation, required to be updated every 5 years. When we moved to GWDRs like this, they're meant to be more permanent. And so I think that's part of the step up. I think it's also, as John Corbett indicated, it's meant to be part of the progression here. I'm interested in how other requirements for the operation of dairies, whether it be organic standards, whether it be Food and Ag or others, could suffice. And I agree, by the way, that you indicated to use and focus on the things that are new. Certainly the 2012 waiver had elements that were prepared by these dairies and operators that if they're still good today, they're still good today. That's as I see it. Yeah. So I would ask that illuminate the things as you can through the process. Yep. One last question for you is, you indicated, you know, that are you actually requesting more time for public comment? The public comment, I think, was 34 days, I think. It closes the 3rd. Are you hearing from dairy producers that there's not enough time or understanding of what the process is here?
They're not engaged enough, I think. I'm not necessarily hearing that they need more time. They're just not engaged. There needs to be time to get them engaged, get them to understand what is the requirement and get their opportunity to get feedback. Okay. So I think there's just a lack of engagement that with a little bit more time, I think we can get that.
Okay, duly noted.
And I do like the move to a WDR from the waiver, that every 5-year renewal. I think there's get some known, you know, a little bit better stability of what it's going to be.
It does, and we've seen it time and again, whether it be, you know, whether it be an ag permitting or other permitting, moving to a GWDR out of a waiver, it does give more long-term stability and more of a confidence then that permit process is looking towards stability and over time, really. It's an important piece. So thank you. Really look forward to your comments.
Yep, thank you.
Ms. Deanne Myers. Followed by Tani Tasconi.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Deanne Meyer. I serve as Livestock Waste Management Specialist for the University of California, Davis, and the University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this GWDR. It's been a long time coming. We knew it was coming. I will say cut some of my comments short. Paul covered quite a few. I'll just say ditto there. With respect to your staff, they do a fabulous job working with the industry. We really appreciate the opportunity to collaborate with them. Sherry and the inspectors, other inspectors, have done a great job getting out, knowing the dairy operators, and trying to work with them on some sensitive issues sometimes related to a potential discharge or concern of water quality. And, of course, the big issue is water quality. So my comments very specifically are that we would like to have equal treatment of all operators within the region. We know I were also the hat as the module coordinator for the California Dairy Quality Assurance Program, and we work with Sherry and with Western United and every dairyman we can work with to educate the producers and be sure they're compliant with this order, also working with the groundwater, the surface water monitoring coalitions. We appreciate the opportunity to do that collaboration and work at the workshops. It's real critical. I will submit detailed written comments. They likely will not make a December 3rd deadline given everything else that's going on, including some holidays in between the 32 days of release. The important thing to remember about these dairies is that these dairy farmers manage pastures. They happen to sell milk, but their primary business is managing pastures. And that means that they have to keep the ground, the soil covered. They have to have a functional pasture in order to be able to sell their product. So water quality, by definition, is critical to them to keep their pasture going. As we look through the different parts of the order, there are some things that producers have done already if they're an existing dairy. And I realize this is a really complex order because it's for new dairies as well. But as much as possible, where people have already done and submitted information in the water quality plan, perhaps we could have a separate document for them with just the new things and just some boxes that say, we've reviewed our water quality plan, we've reviewed each of these sections, nothing has changed, or if something's changed, this is what's changed, instead of having to redo the entire plan. So that would allow the opportunity to streamline review and then certify. Also along that process, for the many producers have done comprehensive nutrient management plans, going back to the NRCS and having another one done isn't going to change what's in the document. As long as the document is consistent, no things have changed with respect to inputs on the facility. If people could identify that they opened it up, that they've looked at it, and in fact that's how they're using their nutrients, that would streamline as well. One of the points I noticed in the nutrient management plan that really does concern me is this is a pasture-based system, and it relies heavily in an organic system on the nitrogen that the cattle are generating. That's predominantly an organic nitrogen fraction. This fraction, if we restrict it to 1.4 times the crop removal, we're not going to have crops produced. So the 1.4 number is not particularly useful in a pasture-based organic dairy system. And so I think perhaps taking it out or softening it up so it doesn't have to be something that we actually achieve. It's a very difficult number to work with. We cannot predict when organic nitrogen will be mineralized. The monitoring and reporting program, from what I have read through it, I guess I wonder the costs associated with groundwater monitoring for nitrate that is half the drinking water standard. At 5 milligrams per liter, there's a whole professional engineer registered geologist report that's going to be required, and that's a bit costly. And I'm not sure how many of the samples that have been taken already actually exceed that value. So I'd be curious what the existing data say to know how many producers that might potentially impact within the region, given the variety of soil types and depth to groundwater that we have. So I think it's, you know, exciting to have a GWDR so we don't have to go through it over and over. It's exciting to have a target there so people know what it is they need to comply with. I think it's really important to streamline where we can and just use the existing documents. When we had the conditional waiver, the RCDs did a phenomenal job making wonderful maps for dairies that everybody uses, and that came from money from CDFA. Because the dairies are no longer in their own state order, they're in the federal milk marketing order, that money is not available for us to access and use. So the funding source that we used last time to help with compliance is gone. It's dried up. And that I've heard of, nobody else has found any money, other money falling out of the sky. So I think it's real important that where possible we use other documents that producers have on their facilities. We have one producer who comes to our workshops who literally brings his box of binders with him, and he's so overly frustrated that he's got all these different reports, and then for water quality, and he's at Region 2, so I'll say that, but then for water quality, he needs yet a whole nother set of reports. So with that, again, I really do appreciate the collaboration of your staff and their willingness and your willingness to have them take their time to go out and work with the actual dischargers.
Thank you very much, Deanna.
Sure.
Any questions? Valerie.
I have one question that I won't necessarily put you on the spot for now, but I guess a suggestion of something to include in your comments if it's of interest to you. A couple of board members mentioned in terms of the riparian management plan, the challenge of defining riparian areas. And so since you and your colleagues are such key technical assistance providers, if you have any feedback about how this is written and whether you feel like it will be feasible for you to provide adequate guidance to producers about what areas they should be including in their riparian management plan, if you have feedback on that, that would be helpful.
Yeah, actually, as I read through the riparian area, it's kind of hard to find it in the order. As I read through it, I thought that our county director in the neighbor county is one of the first people we need to engage in the process, David Lewis, because he's done a lot of riparian area research and work. So we'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Great. Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you.
Tony Tosconi, followed by Doug Beretta.
Good morning. I'm Tony Tosconi with the Sonoma County Farm Bureau. And first of all, I've learned my lesson not to follow Paul and Deanne because they have said everything I was going to say and probably did a much better job at it. But first of all, I just would like to thank the staff. Here at the board, Matt and Sherry have been so welcoming to allow us to make comments, to be part of the conversations and everything like that. That's not to say that we totally agree with the work that's been done, and we are going to do some written comments, but again, it's been nice to have an open, collaborative relationship with the staff here at the board. As Paul mentioned, there is a lot of things going on right now with our dairy industry. We have a lot of dairies who may not even be in business in the next couple of years. You know, I'm sure you've been reading the papers with the decline in the price marketing and pricing structure. And then also, we still have 6 dairies in our local community who don't have a place to ship milk in the next year. So there's a lot of things going on. So my hope would be, and it's something I think you guys have all said you're willing to consider, is as we look at the need to maybe freshen up some of these plans, those dairymen who have already voluntarily done some comprehensive nutrient management plans and things like that, if they don't have to reach out and hire professionals to help them with the plan, because they really their landscapes haven't changed that much, that would be very much appreciative. In addition, and I'm all new to this, but the other day we were having a conversation that there just isn't a lot of technical service providers out there who can help write these plans. So knowing that you have 20% of the dairies who still need to actually start, you know, from fresh and create a new plan, I would hope that there is a process that allows those dairies to first get their plans in before the other dairies, if they need that technical support, use up those resources. So if there's a way to work through that from a timing standpoint, that would be very much appreciated. And finally, the comment about the time to be able to comment on this, just so you know, and you know, it's all about us, but it is all about us. Right now, we do have a huge project we're working on with the Santa Rosa Plains dairies related to the GSA process. And so there's some reports that we're pulling together before the end of this month related to groundwater supplies and things like that. So we're already kind of taxing our dairies in an area, you know, where they should be out milking their cows. They're providing some reports to us on that. And in addition, we do have our California Farm Bureau has their annual meeting down in San Diego the first week in December. So if there was any more time given to allow us to provide written comments, I'm sure that would help many, many of our counties here and up to the north. So thank you so much. And again, thank you for this process.
Thank you, Tony. Any questions, comments? Great. Thank you. Mr. Doug Beretta. Followed by Chris Howard.
Good morning, staff and board. My name is Doug Beretta, and I kind of wear two hats. I am the chairman of the Animal Resource Management Committee from the Farm Bureau, and also am a dairy operator here in Region 1. One of the things I do, I still have to echo from the first three speakers, is this staff has been very great working with the dairy industry and always has been. Going to the water quality plan, I have to echo, I have since 1987 started with a UC Extension farm plan. I have a set of binders that adds up to be about this high, and I do not want to have to go through and rewrite this whole plan again. It is something that takes time and money, and it starts to get very frustrating that we as dairymen have to continue to hand information in that everybody in this county and in this water district have. Going to the nutrient management plans, Sherry stated that 25% of us started in 2012. I was one of those that did a comprehensive nutrient management plan that didn't have to do it, but I got wanted to be proactive. Now we have 20% that are going to need to be done. That adds up to about 45% now because mine is outdated. It is 6 years old, and I'm going to have to redo the whole thing with upgrades because of the way the program works. So it's not just going to be 20% that need to be done. If we're going to meet this, we may need to be doing 45 to 50% of these plants. Also, within the monitoring, the groundwater, or the, excuse me, the surface water monitoring program, I really want to make sure that you guys know that your staff made a great change from a 30-day period where we have to go out and collect those samples for surface water to 14 days. It'll make things so much easier for our sampler within this time frame. With the lack of total rain in the last number of years, we have struggled to get three samples to turn in for this permit because the way our rain has been coming. So this will be, we will be able to hit certain sites probably 14 days. We will not, one of the concerns was that we would just get all these samples within 14 days and, you know, not worry about it, but that has not been something that we have done. The other thing I need you to understand is when this went in 2012, this was kind of a blind sample. We were supposed to throw all the sites in a hat, pull a majority of them, and report those. For the last 3 years, we have reported every site that we have sampled to make sure that this is, we are very happy with the way our dairymen have been taking care of the waste management program. Also, going back to the groundwater water monitoring, in 2012, we did it for, I believe, three samples, one in the fall, or actually it was 2 years in a row. Those samples cost about $100 a piece. I had to do a majority of wells, so I was spending $300 a year on our farm. We have wells that are at 40 feet, and none of those samples came back out of the realm. We've been dairying on the same site since 1948, so over 70 years. And it's just really, I can't understand why we have to go back to this groundwater sampling if there hasn't been a problem from the previous samples that we handed in 2012, 13, and 14. And then also, back to the comment period, it is a very busy time. I have sat down and was on the call last Friday as the chair of the committee, have gone through this, taken me about 2 days to really go through the new plan. I don't think I've covered every single thing as a dairyman. We're at the point where we're all getting ready for winter. We have holidays coming in. So if there's any way to extend this comment period, I think that would be very helpful to all of us. Thank you.
Doug, point of clarification, your nutrient management plan, you know, the nutrient management plan, in my understanding, was for cow dairies with greater than 700 cows in the original 2012 waiver. But as you indicate, there were a great number of dairies that went out here and did nutrient management plans, including yourself, it sounds like. From that standpoint, Doug, are you saying that you're having to redo your plan because of new requirements, or is it an obsolete plan? Why would you redo that plan?
What we've been told is it's a five-year-old plan, so it needs to be reviewed, and if there's been any changes. The problem that we're going to run into is, as Paul alluded to, my plan was done with the help of Western United Dairymen. Paul Souza has not re-upped his license, so now I'm going to have to get somebody totally new to come in and look at this plan, and that could be costly. It could be timely if they will even take the calculations that were done. It is an NRCS plan. Also, to get cost share money through NRCS programs, we have to have comprehensive nutrient management plans. So there are a lot of other entities doing these, and the staff and technical people are just not here to get it done by the end of 2020.
But at the same time, Doug, has your operation changed appreciably, or in your estimation, is your plan the same plan that you would run with?
It'll be the same plan. We haven't changed anything.
Okay. And there were several comments this morning that we've had consistently then to review and use existing documentation if it can be used to be reflective of existing conditions and regulatory requirements and otherwise.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Let me ask you one other thing, because I know you're part of the Sonoma County Farm Bureau Animal Resource Program. Back in the day, I know that, you know, Mr. Holtz used to run around and do that kind of work and do the forensic work during storms and do ammonia and EC type of work. How is that being done now? You indicated that, you know, that it sounds like it's still being done. It sounds like it's being reported. How big of an area are you covering now, Sonoma County Farm Bureau? I'm just curious.
Sonoma County Farm Bureau is covering both Region 1 and Region 2, so that's Sonoma and Marin County.
Yeah.
We have a new sampler, Steve Reese, that took over for Earl Holtz. We are actually in the process of hiring another sampler to help us out, because we're going to have, between both regions now, we're going to have almost 80 sites to be doing, and from Point Reyes to Sonoma to Healdsburg. So we're covering both counties, huge amount, and it is starting to, you know, we charge each one of the dairymen, and probably with the time and things like that, we are probably going to have to increase that charge, possibly to the dairymen, just to cover actual travel time and other things. So we are reporting that. Those reports, Steve pulls the samples. They're reported to me. If there is any problem, anything out of the realm, I'm on the phone that day to the dairyman, and then we will go back and resample if we need to, go back and check things out. And then that's all submitted to both water boards.
That's been a really powerful tool out there, just to forensically look and see what's happening real time, handle things on an expedited basis. It's been a really great program. And I know that Earl Holtz, I remember talking to him and his wife one day and at a barbecue or something, and she was saying, you'll never get him to stop doing it. He really had a passion for that. It was really a good thing to do. I really appreciate, just as a dairyman, you coming and also your involvement with the Farm Bureau. Any other questions for Doug Beretta? Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. All right, we have Mr. Chris Howard, followed by Felice Pace.
Good day. Great to see everybody on the board again. My name's Chris Howard. I'm with Alexander Dairy, your furthermost dairy on the North Coast, and the very first dairy in the process to open our doors when you guys decided to move down the path of waivers. It was a very difficult process for many dairies in this region at the time to open our doors because there was uncertainty with that process. But we were the guinea pigs, and it turned out to be a wonderful process led by incredible staff. Both Matt and Sherry have been incredible to work with, and I don't say that lightly. They have been incredible to work with and extremely responsive, especially to us on the North Coast. And that all comes from great leadership, which is led by this board. In moving forward with this process, as stated by many people here today, the certainty of having a general waste discharge permit, I think this is going to be great for us. Not having that certainty going forward in the future, I think, would be harmful. The changes that are being talked about today, both by Paul, both by Deanne, and the other dairy members in this room, I think are critical for us to reflect back on and what that means to us as dairy operators in the state. Just trying to weasel out a meek income in ever-changing markets, it's very difficult. Alexander Dairy being one of the largest on the North Coast, we have some resources that are not necessarily available to other small dairymen that are operating at a smaller scale with just one or two people. They have a great deal of cost that they're going to have to wrestle with potentially with this new process. Hopefully the board will take those into consideration and give them the time and leniency to get those pieces done, but still be in compliance. Compliance is extremely important, and we know it's important for us, as recognized by many people in this room. Protecting water quality is your job, but it's also ours. It's very important to us what we do. We want to work with nature, not against it. And in an organic process, which is what most of the folks are here in the room as dairymen, we want to make sure our pastures are green, bright, and put nutrients into those cattle. Specific to the tribal piece of this consultation process, I don't think it's going to be much new than what we're already going through. Especially when the process for a new construction of a facility takes place, we already have those processes in place with the county through the CEQA, where we go out and consult with tribes. The riparian piece is extremely important to us. How that's defined, how we work with it, I'll give you an example here. Alexander Dairy, Dilnart County, Tryon Creek. This is a creek that used to be extremely important to salmon runs on the Smith River. It's an estuary tributary. It dries up annually, most likely caused from issues with flooding in 1964 that buried the entire system under sediment. But the system does go dry. As we've grown out of that through time, we've been impacted by one particular invasive species, reed canary grass, that is literally choked out the entire system. Alexander Dairy practices what has now been defined in this plan as flash grazing. It is the only thing right now keeping that creek open to migrating salmon during the winter period, and more importantly, having overwintering habitat for the most important species up there, coho salmon. And we know this only because of a transparent process that takes place with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, where we monitor those critters coming into our system. They pit tag some up in the Mill Creek watershed, and we've had little sensors on our creeks that show that pit tag coming through onto us. And what was interesting to find out, even if these fish have tried to get through this the state park system, which is absolutely a maze of culvert pipes, standpipes from old relic engineering, when they do get onto us, they overwinter on us. And the fish that overwinter on us, coho salmon specifically, grow three times larger than their counterparts that stayed up in the upper watersheds. And the theory going by Justin Garwood is that they have more critters available for them to eat in our system than anywhere else. And they escape, go back into the estuary and out to the ocean to become big salmon and hopefully return someday. But without those practices of flash grazing within the creeks, and more importantly, allowing that sunlight penetration to allow those critters to grow, we wouldn't have probably what we have here today. So the recognition of that in your plan is extremely important. We need to be adaptive as we move forward and think about how these systems work. I just want to say, I heard earlier today something about the fee structures. We do pay fees, part of the dairy waiver process. Many of us commented to the state board many years ago in Sacramento about these fees and their impact to us. Some of us could afford them, some of us couldn't. But more importantly, what I heard this morning is that not a lot of that gets back up to here. Our hope is if we're going to continue to pay some of these fees, that they impact this lady right behind me. She does an incredible job for you guys. She actually does the outreach, she does communication, and she makes sure that your wishes are implemented on the ground and that we're doing everything we can to protect water quality in our area. So I'm hoping some of that fee structure that we do pay into actually comes back to the North Coast region and helps her program specifically in making sure she could do it right for you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions for Chris? Great. Felice Pace, and then I have one last for Mr. Bob Leggy.
Good morning again. Felice Pace, water chair for the North Group Redwood chapter of the Sierra Club. Yeah, I appreciate the progress that has been made. I think we've made more progress with dairies in this region than we have with other agriculture in terms of actually requiring compliance with some kind of standards. Sherry mentioned that she had talked to the Sierra Club. I just want to let you know she didn't talk to me. I don't know why, but I have not been contacted, even though I've been involved in these issues. You know, dairies and CAFOs are, according to the ABA, the EPA, the number one reason our rivers and streams are impaired. Organic standards do not address discharges in any way. They have little to no impact on water quality performance. I mean, I drink organic milk, and I think it's great that we have all these organic producers. It's the majority of them up where I live, and it's great. And I love Alexander Dairy, you know, in particular. But, you know, organic standards are not have no relationship to meeting water quality standards. And, you know, I appreciate the board wanting to protect its operators, our dairy operators, from excessive regulation. And I want to do that too. I want performance, not documents. You know, but I also want you, I would like to see you expressing the same kinds of concerns about pregnant mothers and children who drink some of this nitrate water. Right up there in Del Norte County, there's the Reservation Ranch, has 20 hookups on a public water system, and I've looked at the reports of violations of nitrates that are, you know, being drunk by pregnant women and children. And that's a big health risk. So I hope you're as equally concerned about that as you are about the health of our of the dairy economy. The USGS says that 65% of shallow wells in ag areas have these nitrate problems, you know, and so the monitoring of groundwater is tremendously important, and you can't tell what's going to happen in the future based on what happened in the past. You know, past performance is not a guarantee of future performance, so that has to be ongoing. By the way, I'll make some comments, whatever your deadline is. CEQA relies on mitigation measures to justify a negative declaration in this, and I believe that in order for that to be effective, that there has to be a quality assurance program on these mitigation measures, and that has to be directly done by water board staff. You know, I guess the taxpayers, because of the way Sherry's position is funded, I guess the taxpayers are subsidizing the regulation of the dairy industry. I think the dairy industry fee structure should be such that it pays for its own necessary regulation. Because it is an activity, and that's why we've worked on it so much, that it has potential for great impacts on people's health. You know, I'll comment, there's some loopholes in there that need to be addressed, I think, need to be tightened up a little bit, but I think you basically have a good document. I'm glad, but we are moving to a WDR that's going to, you know, stay in effect. So it's very important that we get this one right, because we're not going to revisit it every 5 years. So I would support, I think it's a foregone conclusion. We're going to have an extension of the comment period. We should, I think, have it. And I support that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Felice. Any comments or questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to refine my earlier comment because I decided it was a little too bit broad in ag. In asking the question, there's no implication of my evaluation as to the effectiveness of existing programs. That's another issue. And I wanted to make sure you recognize that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Felice.
Anything
else? I have one last speaker card for Bob Leggy.
Good morning, Board Chair Noren and members of the board. Bob Leggy with Russian Riverkeeper. We're still reviewing the draft permit. And these are high-level comments. We met with management staff and Sherry last week to discuss some of these same issues, and we appreciate the time that they put aside for us. And we would request that comments be kicked forward to mid-December at least, as well as other people have mentioned that. Yeah, mid-December would be great, if not 60 days in the beginning of the year, because this is a last kind of ditch effort for us. In many ag waivers and permit programs, documents, data, and specific information that staff relies on to develop the permit or assess compliance is not made available to the public. This goes against the Clean Water Act. In Carmen Zamora versus Central Coast Water Board, this practice was declared illegal. In this draft permit, the nutrient management plans and possibly other documents that are submitted to staff may not be available for public review. As we are now challenging the NOA for Healdsburg Recycled Water Irrigation Program, how they calculate agronomic rate seems about high efficiency farming and not protecting water quality. Overapplication generally results in polluted runoff. It's critical, we believe, that every document used for this permit be available for public review, just like every other permit Clean Water Act program for non-point source discharges. The other permit element called out in Zamora was not obfuscating the identity of individual farms and group monitoring programs. The permit should not attempt to shield identities to be in compliance with that ruling. Another recent ruling on ag permits, Monterey Coast Keeper versus State Water Board, deals directly with how to implement the state's non-point source policy, Many ag permits have been written in a way that conflicts with the current NPS policy in the following areas. No benchmarks for how much improvement towards water quality standards are needed to protect water quality or prevent further degradation. No anti-degradation analysis, just statements do not equate to performing the required analysis. Inadequate monitoring to verify compliance with permit terms and not monitoring for key pollutants like pollutants in runoff like phosphate and bacteria and pathogens. No description of specific enforcement measures if those enrolled fail to meet objectives, and reliance on management actions for permit compliance rather than water quality standards as called for by the 1985 Ninth Circuit opinion in Northwest Indian. Riverkeeper spent years monitoring water quality at the edge of dairy spray fields. Orthophosphate, ammonia, and nitrate were all orders of magnitude over water quality objectives. When we review monitoring data from spring of 2016, both sample collection events began over 24 hours after the peak of the hydrograph had passed, even longer since rain ended. The data collected to assess compliance appears to be sampled far too late to capture pollution. This needs major improvement to serve as a compliance measurement tool. Lastly, we must shift our permit focus from outputs like BMP-based compliance to outcomes, water quality standards, as your mandate is to protect water quality, not making sure XYZ activity is occurring. Last Thursday, the Central Coast Board signaled that they would be putting numeric water quality criteria in ag permits. Our work on this permit and every other ag permit is part of a coordinated statewide effort to improve water quality and permit effectiveness. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you, Bob.
Can you get it in a letter? You raised quite a few complex legal issues, and I'm very interested in what's a public document and what isn't, and availability to the public, and so I'd like to review your comments in detail.
Absolutely, and please consider giving us another 2 weeks, and those in the room as well.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Your issue was larger than this, so.
I don't have any other speaker cards. Sherry, may I ask that you come back up, please? Actually, let me just start. So, Sherry, a lot of really great comments here. Just wanted to kind of capture a couple things as we go. I'll let Greg start off. Mr. Giusti?
Yeah, as always, I always appreciate the opportunity to listen to thoughtful comments from everyone. Couple of obvious common denominators, and they seem reasonable to me. I'll start out easy. Is it possible to extend the public comment period to accommodate people's schedules and still meet our schedule, but at the same time recognizing that it's, as someone said, it's our obligation to get it right. And I think part of it, getting it right, is making sure that we're transparent and people have an opportunity for input. So what would be a reasonable extension in your opinion?
I think we'll definitely discuss this with the management after the okay. meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that with the board's if it's the board's pleasure that we extend the public comment period, we will absolutely do that. If we extend the public comment period, you know, more than to the end of the first week in December, so if we extended it to December 7th, which is only another 4 days, we would still be able to make the February board meeting. If we extend it beyond that, I think it becomes quite difficult. I've been kind of counting the days, and it would be pretty difficult to do a meaningful review of the comments, provide a comprehensive response to comment document. If we extend it a full 2 weeks, I think we'd then have to bump the hearing to the April meeting. It's just the reality of the time that it does take for us to do a response to comments document and make the necessary revisions to the document. So if we're prepared to do that, but just want people to know the implications if we do extend.
Yes, I would recognize the push, that it puts on you would not expect then, because if a public comment period were extended, I would not expect then to shorten the period that, you know, you could respond to those. I would, if it were up to me and I were rule of the world, I'd extend it 30 days, frankly, even if it did take it out to a further date, to a further meeting. I think that would be a smart thing to do. We got Christmas and the holidays in the way anyway. So from the standpoint, it would just be my suggestion, and it's open for discussion here, to go 30 days to January 3rd, even if that pushes us to an April meeting, frankly. That wouldn't bother me one bit. I think the outcomes are important, and I think to have the ability for people to participate in this at this point in time going forward is really critically important.
So I'm going to, whatever the board wants, I'm going to roll with, but I think, you know, I'm looking forward to hear what other people have to say. And then the other, what I thought was very reasonable request from a number of presentations, is the idea of using existing plan material, if it meets the law and it meets the standards which are outlined, can these new additions be considered addendums to existing water quality plans? In other words, you know, rather than asking, this is a, and Sherry, I think this would fall on you, but if you think somebody's nutrient management plan addresses your needs and the needs of the law, can that be checked off and somebody put their energy on adding another addendum to meet these new requirements? In other words, is it a requirement that everybody go back and start from zero and rewrite everything if you think the existing documentation that the dairy has meets the requirements?
They definitely don't need to start from zero. It would be an addendum.
Okay. I hope everyone heard that, because I think it's a reasonable request, and obviously Sherry knows your operations better than I do, and if she's comfortable, I'm comfortable.
Sherry, let me ask you a question. So if I was looking at the nutrient management plan, water quality plan documentation that's in these appendices, and it was alluded to that excuse me, that these have to be prepared by a professional. So at some level, some of these are signed off. The nutrient management plan, I think, was specifically in that realm. The one thing I don't see, and it may be helpful in this, for one thing, I agree with not starting from zero. That's just nonsensical. But to prepare an addendum if needed. But also, in a lot of statewide documents, there becomes, say, like stormwater, there's a legally responsible person. Right, a legally responsible entity that signs their name to the process and plans. That may be helpful here. That not the preparation of the plan, but that the plan is implemented, and that these water quality plans then are vested within the legally responsible owner of the facility that then implements. It may be a helpful way to get to addendums or to use existing materials. That these existing materials were certified by and prepared by a registered professional. Certainly, if there's a significant amount of addended material or changes to those plans, that certainly could rise to the level of having then a review by a registered professional or a qualified person, I should say. I would just encourage looking at these materials in a way that could be streamlined. Certainly, you know, Doug Beretta indicated there was 20% of dairies, and maybe up to 40% that would need to go back and look at these plans. I believe there was also then the comment that there ought to be a priority to get to the ones that don't have a plan, because the nutrient management plan wasn't a requirement for all dairies in the beginning. It was a requirement for dairies that had over 700 cows. But for many dairies went forward and did a nutrient management plan. I support then having nutrient management plan first and foremost be prepared for dairies that don't have them. Use those resources towards dairies that are without a plan. I think that was a really great comment. And then secondarily, move towards a review of the existing plans that people have, and if they need to be addendum, work with those addendums to make them to the requirements that need to be to meet this permit. I think that would be a rational way to approach this process. Just a suggestion.
Yes, we're taking that into consideration. Thanks.
Mr. John Corbett.
Yeah, we renewed in 2016 the conditional waiver, and then that means in 2019 it's going to come up. What was the date of the renewal? And what I'm trying to do is, if we schedule a delay, we have to, staff evaluates that we have new information. We got a public hearing stuck in there, And I don't want us to end up putting everyone bare from a regulatory standpoint. So if staff could look into that, we may need to have an emergency, well, not an emergency, but a conditional waiver extension, or we just don't schedule past the time that expires. But that's my concern.
I think we have that now.
The extension doesn't expire till 2021, so I think we're good.
Yeah, I think we have that now. We short-term extended it in 2016.
Right, but that's only 3 years, right? Or no, it's 5 years, I think. It's five years. Stand corrected.
Sorry, you're good to go. Any other questions, comments? Do you need some type of formal recognition from the board to extend 30 days or whatever would be a recommendation from the board? Do you guys want that? How do you plan? I mean, it seems like there's an agreement that an extension could be warranted. I think there's agreement that extension could be fruitful. I, again, personally feel that if we extend this to January 3rd, which would be a 30-day extension from existing, if that bumps this to a April adoption instead of February, I could absolutely live with that. It's just a suggestion. I don't know if you need something from us to do that. I think the decision is yours. If you want more unanimous conversation about this from board members, we can go down that road if you want.
We don't need anything formal in terms of a vote. The board members' comments are sufficient. I guess I would just ask if any board members disagree with an extension, let us know now.
Anybody disagree? Does anybody disagree with a 30-day extension to go to January 3rd if that bumps us out a ways?
Okay.
That's a recommendation from the board. We could live with that as far as schedule and outcomes. I think the outcomes are more important than schedule, frankly.
So I'm going to do my duty overseeing the fact that are working on many things, and in the non-point source division, there are several other key things that are on the April agenda tentatively. That includes the Green Diamond Elk River management plan, the categorical timber waiver, and so just board members are aware of this, but when one thing bumps, it does have implications for other projects that also are under a schedule. So I'm just putting that out there.
I appreciate that. Okay. Yeah.
That's why you gave us 2 days.
Exactly. No, that's right. Thank you. Good point.
Okay. I think we're in good shape.
Great.
Very well done. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
I'm going to do a break to 11:30, and then we'll figure out what to do next.
That's.